I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. It's Freedom to Read Week once again, and joining me now is Franklin Carter. He was on last year to talk about his work with the Book and Periodical Council and its Freedom of Expression Committee, and does the same this year. We'll talk about what this week is all about, what we as readers and what we can do as readers and citizens. It's also interesting to see what challenges writers, editors, and publishers might have. As well, we can highlight some of the events of the week. FreedomToRead.ca is the website for more. Franklin Carter, for over 15 years now, has been handling and researching censorship issues for the Council's committee. He is a freelance editor working with nonfiction writers and publishers in Canada. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in Toronto this day, Franklin Carter. Mr. Carter, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us. So you're at the fore of freedom of expression issues and the sort. So since we last talked about a year ago, how are we doing? Is there anything new in sort of this area of thought and these issues?
Well, we continue to collect instances of attempted censorship in Canadian public schools and libraries. We continue to monitor, when we can, censorship at the Canadian-U.S. border. And it's always impossible, or I won't say impossible, but it's always difficult to quantify how well we are doing, because many challenges to publications in Canada go unreported. We only find out a fraction of what actually is challenged. But things seem to be pretty much the same. People are still trying on occasion to remove books from schools, libraries, and the government continues to hold up some publications at the border.
Well, when you use the word attempted censorship, does that mean that we don't have instances of censorship in this country?
Well, it actually breaks down to both. If we're talking about informal local censorship that's aimed at schools and libraries, very often the challenge will fail. You know, some people will complain about a book or a magazine, possibly a newspaper, and the authorities will review the complaint and then they'll reject it. But sometimes they do accept it. At the border, however, the story is a little different. Border authorities, that is, members of the Canada Border Services Agency, do target works that they think are sexually obscene or works of hate propaganda. So if they come across something like that, they will seize it, they will analyze it, they will make a determination in secret, more or less in secret. Some things are allowed to enter the country, but some things are not.
And do you ever get a list, say, of what they find objectionable or what is objectionable?
Yes, indeed. The Prohibited Importations Unit of the CBSA releases a quarterly list. And it is publicly available. You can actually subscribe to it and read it. It's usually about 15 pages long in PDF, and it lists all of the titles that the government has found and stopped at the border. It also says what the government did with the work, if they ultimately allowed it to be imported or if they just banned it outright. Most of the time, the stuff on the list is hardcore pornography. Usually it's in DVD format, but it also lists a few books and pamphlets and magazines from, for example, Nazi organizations or white supremacist organizations in the United States.
So you've listed some of these things that they deem objectionable. Is a position of the committee that all of those materials be allowed into the country?
Well, our position is that government, the citizens should be free to make their own decisions. I realize this is perhaps an unpopular position to take, but, you know, the process does take place in secret. From time to time, officials of the CBSA detain or even turn back legal materials. The process is not really transparent. So we do have a problem with that.
Is the process that the border agency, is that political at all? Does it matter who's in office, say, in Ottawa?
I don't think it does.
No. Well, what about, did you find it frustrating when people try to say that that defending speech or expressions that one may find personally distasteful or just not their, you know, not the views that they hold, that defending those are that you have to defend things that you might find personally distasteful, I guess, clumsily put?
That's okay. Yes, we do defend works that we find personally distasteful. The view of the committee, and certainly my view, is that we're defending freedom of choice. We think that citizens should be free to make up their own minds about what they read and what they don't read. They should be free to, you know, draw their own conclusions about a work, even if a lot of Canadians find the work really, really ugly, you know, a work of obscenity, for example, or a work of hate propaganda. Just because you do look at those kinds of works does not mean that you are, you know, committing a crime. It doesn't mean that you are more inclined to commit an antisocial act. To take a mundane example, lots of people read Mein Kampf, the famous Nazi work, and they manage to remain responsible, reasonable, law-abiding, and peaceful citizens. They don't turn into Nazis or terrorists. I think most people, when they are exposed to even, you know, really ugly publications, manage to retain their sanity and remain within the boundaries of the law.
In terms of the work that the council does and the work that the committee does and your role there, do you find that the public generally pays attention, I should say, to freedom of speech issues, or do you find that they're complacent? I mean, freedom of speech is something that in this country we generally take for granted, right? And so, you know, we're not living in a third world country where there's a dictatorship or
right.
the media censored. I mean, this
right.
is not something that's an everyday concern for a lot of people, right?
I think it depends on who you're talking to. In recent years in Canada, there has been a great deal of writing and controversy about the behavior of a limited number of human rights tribunals in Western Canada,
mm-hmm.
particularly in your province, BC,
mm-hmm.
but also in Alberta and Saskatchewan. Some of those tribunals have taken it upon themselves to punish people who publish, for example, anti-gay letters to the newspaper or anti-gay pamphlets. You know, there was a lot of media attention focused on that, especially when Ezra Levant and Mark Stein
mm-hmm.
were in the spotlight 3 or 4 years ago. But if you're talking about other issues such as custom censorship or challenges to books and magazines in schools and libraries, I think that issue receives far less attention. It seems to me that a book challenge or an active attempted censorship is more likely to receive coverage if the author is well known. Someone like Margaret Atwood or Mark Twain. But if the author and the book are not that well known, or if the magazine is not that well known, then it will fly below everybody's radar. Everybody will miss it.
And there are books by Atwood and the sort that are actively the banning of them. They're attempting that throughout the country, right?
I wouldn't say throughout the country, but it happens from time to time.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading somewhere on your website, there's a list there of books that...
Yes.
Yeah. And those are books that are fairly well known, right?
I would say so.
Yeah.
But not all of them are. You know, there's, for example, the most recent list that we have was provided to us by the Canadian Library Association in 2010. and it includes a number of works that are probably not that well known by Canadian readers. A novel called Hot City by Barbara Juice was challenged somewhere in Canada. A DVD called Islam, What the West Needs to Know, has been challenged. A Russian novel, Peer, by Vladimir Sorokin, was challenged in 2010. Even innocuous titles such as Chicken Soup for the Unsinkable Soul, you know, Jack Canfield's work, mm-hmm. was challenged. I don't remember reading anything about these challenges in the Canadian newspapers or magazines.
The other thing that's frightening is that a lot of these challenges can stem from one single complaint. Is that right?
That's true. It doesn't take a lot to trigger a challenge. All people have to do is march into a library and complain to a librarian, and they will be presented with a form. People can complain to their school trustee or to their high school principal, and they complain about books as well. And once again, very often, this process does not result in the removal of a book or a magazine, but sometimes it does.
And so one of the things that you do, other than the editing that you do as your job, is you work with the committee and you handle and research sort of these challenges, do you?
We try to find out when they're happening and where they're happening. We collaborate with the Canadian Library Association, which conducts a survey annually. What we really try to do is collect as much accurate information as we can, and we publicize it, especially during Freedom to Read Week, because we think that, you know, there is a bias in Canada in favor of freedom to read. We just think people need to know that these things are going on, and we'll get their support most of the time.
So what are some of the events that you'll be participating in Toronto this week?
Well, tomorrow there is an event at the Gladstone Hotel in central Toronto, or south central Toronto. We are hosting Mark Bury, who is the author of The Fog of War.
Right.
This is a book that deals with censorship in Canada during World War II. And Susan Swan, who is a writer of literary fiction, she'll be at the same event. And they'll be talking about censorship in Canada since World War II. At the same event, Lawrence Hill, who is the author of The Book of Negroes, will be on hand to receive a Freedom to Read Award from the Writers Union of Canada. Other events will happen as well.
Yeah, and on the website, freedomtoread.ca, there's a list of events. And sort of there's an installation here in Vancouver at UBC that people can check out as well. The Internet, we're talking on the Internet this day about Freedom to Read. That seems to be a place where freedom of expression is challenged on a regular basis, isn't it? It's becoming sort of the new arena where, like I was reading on your website, freedomtoread.ca, that there's been some new development in terms of publishing, that just linking to something does not constitute publishing.
That's true. There was a legal dispute in British Columbia. It's the Crooks versus Newton dispute that was resolved just a few months ago by the Supreme Court of Canada. I won't go too much into the details, but the basic issue was, is it illegal to hyperlink to somebody else's web page if there is defamatory material on that web page? And the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that it is not. You are responsible for what is on your own website. However, if you link to defamatory material on somebody else's website and you endorse what's on there, then you may be liable for a defamation suit. So this was actually quite a serious case, because if the Supreme Court of Canada had ruled the other way, organizations that link to numerous websites, you know, maybe have hundreds or even thousands of web links, would be responsible for what was on somebody else's pages. Mm-hmm. And it could have cast quite a chilling pall over internet communication in Canada.
Well, what are some of the other concerns that you've noticed, trends, if you will, with regards to freedom of expression and the internet?
Well, right now, some members of the Freedom of Expression Committee we're starting to think about Bill C-30. If you've been following the news, the federal government has introduced a bill, a proposal, to legalize warrantless police and CSIS surveillance of the Internet. And there is something of a backlash going on in Canada right now, but we are asking ourselves, is this a freedom to read issue? Is this something that our committee should be concerned about? And a few of our members think that it is. Because if if, for example, you're a journalist, you might be researching something, controversial, such as terrorism in Canada, or you might want to write a journalistic story about kiddie porn. Is it going to hurt you if, are you actually going to do that if you know that the police could be watching your, while you research, will they get the wrong idea about what you're doing? Do you want to fall under official suspicion? It could be argued that this legislation, which has not been passed yet, could affect people's reading habits online.
So you said that some members of the committee think this is an issue. Is this something that you'll all discuss and then come out with something, say, later in the year, perhaps?
Yes.
I mean, how does the committee work, essentially?
Oh, well, it's actually a large group. We have representatives from various professional associations. For example, the Canadian Library Association, the Canadian Publishers Council, the Editors Association of Canada, the Writers Union of Canada, and Magazines Canada is another organization. So they all send representatives to the Book and Periodical Council, but also to the Freedom of Expression Committee. And from time to time, an issue will come up, and we will discuss it. Sometimes we will discuss the issues face-to-face in quarterly meetings, either at the Book and Periodical Council or elsewhere. And sometimes we just discuss the issues by email. But not all members take part in the discussion. Some, like all committees, some members are more active than others.
Mm-hmm. These the concerns that we've talked about this day, Franklin, are concerns not just for this week, but stuff that we should think about year-round. I appreciate your time today, and we'll certainly visit the website. And good luck with your efforts.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The website, freedomtoread.ca. Franklin Carter, he's from the Freedom of Expression Committee of the Book and Periodical Council. He's on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.